as far as the true definition of balance, I don't believe that applies for women. I really don't believe it applies for anybody, but
I love that honesty.
Yeah, balance is not 50-50. Balance is where you choose to tip the scales on a day-to-day basis. Balance is giving your best and showing up the best that you can that day. And if 10% is all you have and that's the best that you have, that's 100% of your scale. So, you know, I really believe that it's give and take. I believe that some days it's 90-10, 70-30. You know, in order to, I think, be great at anything, you have to be able to be willing to give a little bit more in that area from time to time.
I know you're still finding your way, even the moon has phases, but you've got what it takes, my girl, and we'll be right there. You're
more. Welcome to Women in Progress, the podcast that brings together women from all walks of life to share their stories of growth, reinvention, and wisdom. I'm your host, Mara Chance, and each week we explore the journeys of women navigating career pivots, personal transformations, and the beauty of change. Through honest conversations and shared experiences, we bridge generations and celebrate the women we're becoming. This is a space for every woman evolving, questioning, and redefining herself. Melanie Fiona is a two-time Grammy Award-winning singer-songwriter, a mother, a podcast host, and an advocate for women's wellness and healing. Her music, from soulful anthems like It Kills Me to Teach Him, which my mom just sent me as a reminder weeks ago, has always carried a truth and emotional honesty that resonates deeply. Melanie and I first connected at a gathering for International Day of Purpose, created by our mutual friend Jovian Zane. I've been inspired by her journey and envious of her gold jewelry collection long before we ever spoke. From the heights of her music career to her evolution as a mother and healer, her story is one of resilience, reinvention, and radical self-trust. In today's conversation, we explore Melanie's transition from being a chart-topping artist to becoming a voice for transparency and truth in motherhood and wellness. She opens up about the lessons she's learned from walking away from the machine, reclaiming her freedom, and what it means to live life on her own terms. We talk about how motherhood has reshaped her identity, the healing power of community, and how she's navigating this new chapter with intention. We also get into her new music, specifically her latest single, Mona Lisa Smile, which she released the day we recorded this episode. It's a song that feels like an anthem for every woman, holding it all together while standing in her power. I am just so excited to have you here. You were always on my vision of who I knew I wanted to have a conversation with whenever this show was going to come to be. So we're here, and we also are celebrating the release of Mona Lisa Smile. So again, congratulations.
Thank you.
Yes. And we're going to just jump right in. So we know your hits. We know your career as a musician, but you are now also repping motherhood,
yes,
a
ma'am.
Digital series and a podcast host. So how does it feel to be Melanie at this stage in life?
Oh, it feels the most fulfilling. You know, funny thing, I was driving my son to school today and my daughter was in the back. And first of all, I never even thought that I would ever have two kids or a daughter.
Mothering doesn't stop, too. I'm like,
no.
You're releasing a song.
Yeah.
And I still have school pickup, actually. Right?
Yeah, exactly. And making breakfast and making lunch and dropping off. But, you know, I didn't even think I would ever have a second child and then a daughter at that. So having a daughter has really changed the game for me. But, you know, this morning the song came out. And so they asked to listen to it and they're singing it in the car. And like, I just got so emotional. I started crying. And, you know, it was just this moment of like, what a gift for my children to be a part of my gifts and a part of my journey. And, you know, cause they're like, they changed my whole world. And so, you know, aside from being a mom and just saying like, hey, that's a new hat I have to wear. They saw me for being a person.
Yeah.
And they're like celebrating and singing my art and my creation. And it was just it felt so rewarding, like more so than any comments or like stream numbers. Like that moment made me feel so emotionally fulfilled. So, you know, it's a dream come true. It really is.
I can't even imagine just like, even also them registering like mom and then like
mom, Melanie Fiona, the singer. Like,
yes,
we're seeing you in different realms. So I can't even imagine what that's like for them. Like, I listen to the radio and like, wait, that's my mom's voice on the radio.
He's so funny. My son is so funny. He'll say the funniest things like, do they know that you're the Melanie Fiona? And I crack up. I'm like, you know what, buddy? It doesn't matter because you know that.
Listen, so we have mom, we have Melanie Fiona, the singer, and we also have the co-host of the Mama Den podcast. Yes. You've talked about it just a little bit, but I would love to know, how has motherhood reshaped your identity and priorities?
You know, it's let me know that there is more to myself than my professional endeavors. Mm. And I feel like for a good chunk of my life, that was the focus. You know, having a child was something I think I always knew I wanted to do. But I was always, especially coming from music and entertainment, very nervous about how motherhood would impact my career.
Yeah.
And I've shared that openly. I've shared that publicly. And I've shared, you know, some hard experiences that I've had to, you know, go through to see how people have treated me differently or have classified me or categorized me. But what it's done is it's given me a full scope of my career. You know, being a mom, creating a podcast, creating communities for wellness and healing for mothers and women is my job. That is a part of my professional career now. And that is so rewarding. And that is actually, I think, what I'm really and truly destined to do for the rest of my life. So it's just all encompassing now. It's given me another layer. It's given me more permission to spread my wings and to recognize that who I am as a person is my business and it is my brand. And all of that is aligned. And I get to be myself for the rest of my life. And that
is— Yeah, there's no separation.
Yeah, there's no separation. I don't, you know, I'm very candid. I'm very vulnerable. I'm very transparent. People know my personal life as well as they know my, you know, professional life. And I love that I don't have to be a version of myself to, you know, disguise one or the other. This is who I am. And that's just freedom for me. And I wish that for everyone. But I'm grateful that I've arrived at this place after many years in entertainment, feeling like I wasn't necessarily always free. So, it's great.
I'm getting chills because I can imagine just that. Just, I'm not gonna say assurance, but even assurance in myself.
Yes.
Of like, there's no mask. There's nothing, you know, there's nothing. I am just showing up as my full self. So I love that. I know about Melanie and the Mama's Den, but for those who don't, can you tell us about the Mama's Den?
The Mama's Den is, I love the Mama's Den so much. I love how organically this collective of beautiful women who become my best friends came to be. How it gave me a space.
We're literally, you're already jumping ahead because I'm like, we're gonna get there. I want to know about this friendship.
Oh yes, we're there. You know how we came to be. It's a podcast of four women: Cody Elaine Oliver, Felicia Latour, Ashley Chia. And we came together and started a motherhood podcast to basically keep it very real about motherhood. And, you know, we had all kind of been doing that individually. And so Cody, who is also the CEO and founder of Black Love, which was a beautiful documentary which highlighted couples and marriages and relationships in the Black Love space that was on OWN, she reached out and was like, hey, do you guys want to do a podcast? And we were like, yeah, if you are going to be a part of it. I'm like, we're doing four people, not three. And so
you sign up too.
Yes. And we wanted to just create spaces and conversations for Black motherhood, for transparency, vulnerability, healing, and saying the things out loud that moms don't sometimes feel like they have the permission to say. And it's been a beautiful, beautiful journey. We've grown so much. We're only two seasons in, but we've grown so much. We've done more press and TV spots and things that we never
saw y'all in New York.
We were busy.
I said booked and busy.
Booked and busy. And you know, that's kind of what our goal was. And we just started this thing just because it was COVID and we just didn't know how to find community in that time because we were also isolated. And so that was what kept us together. And then we came through COVID and I ended up being pregnant again. And so did Ashley. And so for me personally, I always say this, I always feel like the mama's den got me pregnant, because God was like, hey girl, you're not going to go through this alone. You're going to have community and support. Mm. And any fears that you had about having a second child, like push that to the side, you are covered. And I got to share my pregnancy experience in real time through that season. So it was just all very divine, and people have loved it. And it's for everyone. It's for moms. It's for your sisters. It's for the aunties, uncles, dads, anybody who's just interested in hearing what it could be like. Just
yeah, that real.
It's very real. And it's really fun. Really entertaining.
Were you guys, I know you obviously knew Cody, were all of you guys friends before, or like, did this bring you guys together?
So we all indirectly knew each other. Felicia was doing makeup in the music industry for many years, so I'd kind of known her indirectly, but we never had a direct relationship. Ashley and I had met on another mom influencer was doing like a walk, and we met there. And that's where I met Cody and Ashley actually on the same day. And so we kind of just kept in touch. That was in 2018, actually, when I first met Cody and Ashley. And so, you know, we didn't start this thing till basically 2021. And so it's beautiful to just see how everything was being cultivated. God was just guiding us to maintain, to meet, to why we would meet, to what we would create, the purpose, the greater purpose. So we all met and really started spending time together as soon as we just decided to start doing the podcast.
You know, you have these people that you kind of pick up along the way. And to your point, you just, God already has it already mapped out. It's so divine. It's planned. And you just are walking. You're just continuing on with your life. And it's like, oh, this is why we met.
Yes.
This is why we connected.
Right. So. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. I really don't believe in coincidences. I just feel like everywhere we are is where we're supposed to be. So
we obviously know you're hosting. We have new music. So you're still managing this dynamic career alongside your role as a mother. I am just working to take care of myself, which is a lot. So I really do want to know, like, what does balance even look like for you?
You know, this question is probably the most asked question that I get in interviews, in motherhood, speaking to moms, women who are entrepreneurs or working. And my response is always the same. You know, as far as the true definition of balance, I don't believe that applies for women. I really don't believe it applies for anybody, but balance is not 50-50. Balance is where you choose to tip the scales on a day-to-day basis. Balance is giving your best and showing up the best that you can that day. And if 10% is all you have, and that's the best that you have, that's 100% of your scale. So, you know, I really believe that it's give and take. I believe that some days it's 90-10, 70-30, you know. In order to, I think, be great at anything, you have to be able to be willing to give a little bit more in that area from time to time. And so for me, if it comes to my work, I know that I have to enlist help with people and my partner who I trust with my children so that I can go 70% that day in my job. But then there's another day where I tell my team, hey, I'm mom today, and I got 10% of my day for you to answer XYZ, and the rest is dedicated to basketball practice or taking my daughter to the park or, you know, teaching, like whatever that is, cooking, being at home, undisturbed.
Yeah, whatever it looks like that day.
Yeah, whatever it looks like that day. So I think balance changes every day and the scales tip every day.
I think that's so honest, because I think that is how I frame, I guess, for myself, even though I don't have as many things going on. I'm just like, some days I have this to give. And I try to figure out what is the priority for that moment.
100%.
Like, you can do everything. You can't do everything at once.
That part.
Everything's going to get done, but it's not going to be happening right now. So
that part. And like, we put so much pressure on ourselves and the society to feel like we have to get it all done in the day. Like, no, like, if you got something on your list done today, kudos. Because it's hard. It's hard to get anything done.
It is. My dad always would tell me, you can't outwork work. Like, baby, it's going to be some work tomorrow.
Always.
It's going to always be something. Actually, always. To that end, I know that you come from a rich cultural background. You're Afro-Guyanese, Indo-Guyanese, and Portuguese, I believe. And you were raised in Toronto. So let's talk about upbringing. What was it like growing up in a multicultural environment, especially in a country like Canada?
It was amazing. You know, I didn't really even understand that the world worked differently until I left, to be honest, because, you know, having such a rich, supported and celebrated Caribbean heritage growing up in North America or in Canada, where, you know, my parents are immigrants, but everyone around me has an immigrant story. Like, I'm first generation Canadian. So all of my friends growing up were children of immigrants. So culture was something so celebrated and so normal to me. It's a huge part of my identity. You know, my Caribbean culture is everything, the food, the music, the dialect, the language, like everything, just that's what makes me feel like me, lit up the most. So when I came to the States and it's a little bit more pocketed and it's a little bit more like, where is Guyana? And it was like, oh, wait a second. Guyana is not Ghana. Yeah, exactly. Like yeah. There was a lot of misinformation or misunderstanding or just lack of knowledge that I
ignorance.
Didn't know.
So, yeah. And not yeah, for lack of better words, it's just ignorance.
It's just ignorance. Cause some people just didn't know, like they know Jamaica and they don't know. And, you know, and so, you know, it was interesting to have to like redefine and identify myself when I came to the States. So, but you know, Canada's home, Toronto is home. My parents, my family, my friends, like my foundation is there. So every time I go home, it's just, it fills me up. I get to eat my mom's cooking. That's my favorite part. Mm. The food. Oh, the food. I love the food. That's one thing I miss about living in LA. I can't find really great Caribbean food. I found good Caribbean food. Like,
no, you
decent,
cannot.
You know? And it's not like New York.
And I'm not even Caribbean, but yeah, I'm like this isn't where it could be.
Yeah. And, you know, I've done, you know, time in New York as well. And you could get some there because there's a lot more Caribbean culture there. But that's the one thing I miss the most is like there's not a lot of Caribbean culture in LA. But it was beautiful growing up in Toronto. Just a melting pot of culture, the diaspora, just so diverse. I went to school and grew up with people from all over the world. And I think that that's why my level of awareness of culture is great. And that's why I think I always saw just what I want to do, even for my own, you know, personal pursuits and even for my profession was always on a world scale. So that set the foundation for why I think when I first put out music, I was like, we're going to Europe. Like we're going international. We're going overseas first. I want to see the world. I want to take this music everywhere it can go.
I know. So both your parents are immigrants working in finance. Were they supportive of this decision to just pursue a creative career?
So it's interesting. You know, when my parents first immigrated to Canada, you know, they also really had to redefine themselves. They started over completely. They were cleaning banks, and it's interesting because then they would go on to like work in great positions in financial institutions, which is great.
So, wow.
It's a beautiful journey for them. But you know, my dad is a creative at heart, and so is my mom. But I think when you immigrate to a country for a quote unquote better life, and you're in the pursuit of more resources, more information, more support, a better life for your children, better education, better healthcare, et cetera. You know, you think professional, like my children are going to grow up to be lawyers and doctors in, you know, big, you know, metropolitan cities. And we're going to make sure they have the best education so that they can be that. Caribbean people, like that's the goal. Like you want them to be super successful and as a professional.
Absolutely.
And I have achieved that. But initially, you know, my parents didn't know anything about the music industry. So me saying I wanted to become a singer, my parents are like, what do we know about doing that? We don't know anything about that. We know about these books. We know about this arithmetic.
Yeah, I can relate. We know you're taking care of yourself, but we don't really know what all goes into that.
Exactly. You know, so, but, you know, I think that this is the thing that I think we forget. I think people genuinely deep down inside, they forget sometimes at the core what makes them feel alive. And I know my dad, as professional as he went on to become and in financial advising, and my mom being, you know, in corporate banking and being really intelligent and really focused. My dad is a musician at heart. You know, he's a creative. He was a painter. He did martial arts. He played sports. And so, you know, of course, like he's not going to be a professional athlete he didn't go on to become a professional musician, but he educated himself to become a professional and a provider for our family. And so I think when I have shown that I had talent in singing, my dad, I'll say for sure, and my mom too, but my dad specifically was very, very much like, what do you want to do? You want to go for it? Okay, we'll figure it out. My mom, when I first said I was, you know, going to take a year off of going to college, she was like, what do you mean? Like, to pursue what? Like, and I was like, to pursue music. And at this point, I had already dipped my toes into the music industry in Toronto. So, and that didn't work out well. So, you know, I think she was more protective, but.
Yeah, it's just fear.
It's fear.
They want the best for their child. And so,
yes,
you know, I can completely understand that.
And I will say this, I have to give it to my parents because once I actually made the decision and I met my manager, my previous manager at that time, and I had the opportunity to leave Toronto and start traveling to the States to pursue this professionally, my parents said yes. You know, they could have said no. My mom was very strict. I mean, I would go and travel and come home and then my mom would be like, all right, your curfew is. And I'd be like, mom, you know, I was just traveling by myself in my mid-20s. Like I'm out in the world, like all night in the studios. And she was just like, yeah, but when you're home, you're home. And she would try to put a curfew on me. So this just gives you an indication of who my mom is. But my mom said yes. And she let me go. She didn't chaperone me. You know, she let me go be an adult in the world to pursue this and gave me the permission to do that, which was so not on trend for who she was as a parent. So I give so much respect to my parents now that I'm one because they probably were so scared and they were probably so fearful, but they said, she has to go pursue this and we have to let her and we have to support her through that. And they have been. They've been the most supportive parents through this entire journey for me from the moment I dove into it. They've always been supportive parents. Any sports I wanted to join, any clubs, anything I wanted to do, my parents were like, yes, go, we'll figure it out. So to let me leave and go to the States by myself was just a huge thing for my mom, especially, I think.
Literally, when I'm hearing you, and it reminds me just so much of my own life, I had moved originally to LA when I was 14 to pursue pursue acting. Yeah. Lived in a boarding house, and I don't even have a child, but I have like a sibling, a baby sibling, who when I say baby, who's also 25, and God kids. And I'm like, oh my God, you let me go across the world for this dream. Like, I can't even imagine, just you're walking, having a child, I can only imagine is like having your heart walk outside of you.
100.
And having to just hold yourself to allow them to go fly and soar. I'm like, I have anxiety thinking about my non-existent kids.
Girl.
Going out, crossing the street.
Girl, crossing the street. Getting dropped off at school. Yes.
You just, is there anything that you wish you had heard from your parents or like the wise in your life that you would pass on to younger artists?
You know, I will say this. I remember my mom, you know, she told me this after when I was traveling and I would go home and I'd come back and I'd go to the States and I'd come home and I'd go back and, you know, people would be like, well, where's Melanie? And, you know, my mom would have to answer these questions and people were literally like, so do you think it's going to work out? You know, and I think about that and what my parents' experience was that they had to go through that and they shielded me from that. They never like put the pressure of like, okay, so what's the plan here? Like, is it happening? They never rushed me. And so I think even just that support indirectly gave me this mentality that, and I would say this to a younger artist, I would say this to any artist at any age, take your time. It's yours to take. Because this is this, I think, narrative that we've been put under that you're too old or you're too young or you're too this or you're too that. And you know, there's an expiration on your greatness. And I don't believe that. I didn't get a record deal till I was 25. Like that in the world of music at that time, they were signing artists at 16, you know? So I already felt like, am I late? But no, like I wasn't.
Am I the
late,
old
you know?
Woman in the room?
Yeah. Like, is this a thing? And they made you feel like that.
Like, right. And especially if you're next to teenagers.
Yeah. Like, it's like, but wait a second. Y'all are harming these teenagers because you're not protecting their innocence. Right. And, you know, in my opinion, the entertainment business it requires intense protection of the youth. So, and women. And so I would just say that it's like, take your time. It's yours to take. There is no rush. Your greatness is already written. It's already destined. Everything that's for you is there. You just have to keep going to get to it. And be obedient in that travel and in that journey. So that's been my new mantra these days is take your time. It's yours to take.
I love that you mentioned obedience because obviously there was some level of obedience when you just kind of said, fucking, and went independent. At some point, I'm sure there had to be some internal, you know, dialogue happening. I'm curious to know, like, was it, you know, pressure to change or fit a certain mold? Like, did you feel that maintaining your authenticity would hinder your career?
Yes. Yes. In the way that it was before. I did. And, you know, I'm very grateful for the foundation I was able to develop and establish with my previous labels and the quote unquote machine that pushes things to the top of the checklist for everybody who's paying attention. That is a gift and a journey that I would never change. It taught me so much. It actually helped me find myself through that. And so it really allowed for me to ask myself, like, what do I want to do? Who do I want to be? How do I want this to look moving forward? And so it was scary, but I knew it wasn't impossible because lots of people had done it. And what ended up being scary, and I think the hardest part, was the internal dismantling that had to happen. Like, I basically cleared house for everything and everyone that had been with me from day one. And that was really, really hard. That was very heartbreaking. It was very when I made the decision to go independent, the veil kind of got lifted on a lot of things for me. And so, and then I became a mom. And I think that awakened something in me that made me take more autonomy over myself, that made me fight for myself more, that made me stand up for myself more, that made me advocate for myself more, that made me question things more. And I was so scared. I was so scared because for so long I was trusting other people's voices more than I was trusting myself. And I was also at times made to feel like I shouldn't trust myself. And
yeah,
so
you're questioning. Am I trustworthy? Am I making the right choices for myself?
Yes. And can I do this by myself? Mm-hmm. And, you know, and I think that that's what it really had to come down to. It's, do I trust myself to lead myself and to lead other people? And so that was totally a journey. And I love the space that I'm in. I use the word freedom again because I am in charge of my life. I feel like I am responsible for myself. Any decisions that I make, any outcomes, I will have accountability for it because it's me. It's very difficult to process or heal from something when somebody else has done something to you because sometimes you don't get the apology or the accountability. But for myself, I can do the internal work to work through anything that isn't favorable for me, that I've, you know, made a choice or I thought I was making the best decision at the time. So it's a really beautiful place to be. It is very freeing. And, you know, even in this season of putting out music, it's a lot of work. God, is it a lot of work?
I can't even imagine.
It's so much work and, you know, and that's fine. Like, it's my passion. It's my life. So this is my life's work and nobody else can do that job for me. So I have to show up. I have to show up and no one else can show up if I don't show up. So it's great. Like, I love being independent. I love the idea that everything I create is mine. And I love that I get to service that to my supporters directly, should I so choose. I love that I, like I said, have a foundation of people who have been with me since 2009 when I first put out my first project, and they're still here today. That's a gift, one I do not take for granted. So it feels good to be able to show up as myself for those people and show up for myself.
Okay. Let's take a collective breath, shall we? Because what Melanie just shared about trusting herself to lead her life, stepping into her freedom, and having the courage to start over on her own terms, that hit me in my chest. Trust is just such an interesting concept. When we're young, we subconsciously learn who can be trusted to protect us, to do right by us, to keep us safe. And as we get older, that circle of trust extends beyond our family and beyond what's familiar. For as long as I can remember, I've struggled with trusting others. Some of that came from being placed in dangerous situations or being violated by people who are supposed to protect me. But what I've learned and what has been the hardest lesson is that the biggest and perhaps most important journey of trust is learning to trust ourselves. Trusting yourself means having faith in your own instincts, your decisions, your ability to choose what's right for you. And sometimes when things go wrong, we carry the weight of those outcomes like it's our fault. We think, if I had made a better decision, if I had caught the red flags, if I had worded that differently, maybe I could have changed things. But the truth is, we can't control other people's actions. In my therapy journey, I've had to forgive myself for the decisions I made when I didn't know better. And more importantly, I've had to trust that even when the outcome is unknown, I will be okay. Somewhere along the way, I forgot how to trust myself. And I know I'm not alone in that. Relearning trust means remembering who I am, what I've overcome, what I've built. Whether you're pivoting in your career like I am right now, or navigating a new chapter in love or motherhood, it's scary. But hearing Melanie talk about taking her time, about reclaiming her narrative, her voice, her freedom on her own timeline, it reminded me it's ours to take too. So if you're listening to this and feeling it in your body the way I did, I just want you to pause. Maybe close your eyes and just ask yourself, where in my life do I need to trust myself more? Where am I waiting for someone else to tell me it's okay to move, when really I get to decide that for myself? And if you're feeling this episode, if it's speaking to you, take a second to hit follow. Leave a review, especially if you're on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. It helps more women find these conversations, and share it with a friend who's in her own season of becoming.
Now back to my conversation with Melanie Fiona. When we first met, I think it was actually the Day of Purpose. Jovian had a brunch or some type of gathering. And internally, I was crooning, "It Kills Me." internally, I wasn't trying to fangirl too much. But, you know, these 20s have just shown me the wrong person is always the hardest to let go. I mean, you're talking about, you know, letting go of, you know, team and things like that. But I'm even looking from a romantic front and sometimes familial, all of these things. But we know you're now married to your partner, Jared, who I know who's incredible. And in your wedding vows, you said, "My greatest choice in life is choosing you." Mm-hmm. And late last year, you released the song, "I Choose You," which was inspired by these vows. How did you know that Jared was the right person?
Oh, man. I knew he was the right person because, well, spirit was always there telling me that he was the right person. Sometimes you can be the right person at the wrong time. And yeah. I've shared our journey, our love story, where we got together and then we broke up and then we got back together. But the way in which I knew I had to say yes to him when we got back together, because I was deep in a space of no U-turns. That was my rule for relationships, because every time I had, you know, hustled backwards, I'm spinning the block, I'm going back. And it's just like, girl, you knew you had no business spinning that block because you knew that that man was not changing and ready and it was never going to get better. It just wasn't. And so at that time in my life, my thing was no U-turns. And so when we parted ways for our brief breakup, I cut ties altogether. I did not want to maintain a relationship with him of any kind. I wanted it to end where it was. And I wanted to give the space for, if it should be that it will happen again, that it happens because it's supposed to, not because I planted seeds or made sure that he was doing what he said. He was like, none of that. And so I knew Jared was the one when he came and met me where I was at, because I didn't stop moving in the direction I was going. I didn't have to look back. I didn't have to turn around to see if he was coming or encourage him to come. He came on his own accord and he showed up so, so nobly. He showed up so honest and vulnerable. And that was something I had yet to, I think, feel or see, but he said the things that I needed to hear from somebody who wanted to really be with me and build a life with me. And I believed him. And I think the thing that I always say in this is I didn't see the out. In all of my other relationships prior, it was like, oh, if you do this, I'm out. Or like, if we get, I'm out. oh, I'm out. And I broke up and I would break up and I would leave and I had no problems. When we got back together and I said, okay, we're doing this, I didn't see the out. I was committed to this person spiritually, emotionally, where I was like, all right, I'm choosing you, you're choosing me, and we're going to go through life together. And we are going to do our best to go through everything that life could come with together. You know, those vows, when they say in sickness and in health and riches, like all those things, they're not just words, they're real things that happen to people. And we hope they never happen to us. But you know, we're choosing to be on this life journey together. And then we got pregnant shortly after. And which was wild, because I truly feel that more than just us being partners, lovers, twin flames, you know, the choice for each other, I truly believe that our even greatest purpose was just to bring our son Cameron earthside. Because his light as a person on this earth was just something I feel so blessed to be the vessel for. He's everything. And so when we had him and we saw him and we saw who he was, we were like, oh my gosh, this is also like, this is why we had to be
together.
This
is why we're here.
Yes. This, to bring this spirit to the earth. And then it was just, you know, it's been us now. And it's been, oh my God, 12. Oh my God. What year is it? It's been 12 years for Jared and I since we've been together. Yeah. It's been 12 years. So, cause we got together in what, 2013, and it's 2025.
Oh, well, these years are, yes. They say the days are long, the years are short.
Yes. The days are long,
but yes, the years are short.
Yes.
Well, I love that you talked about kind of that you kept moving. You were carrying on and moving in the direction you were moving. And it's amazing just how just plans often change. I saw that with your wedding initially. You had it planned for the Amalfi Coast, and then you ended up executing in your backyard, which if people haven't seen the I Choose You videos, the visuals, you can see just like a glimpse of it. Absolutely beautiful. I'm still struggling hard with like just control and not being able to see things beyond what I planned initially. Mm-hmm.
You're a Virgo, aren't you?
Girl, you know that.
You're,
yep.
Yeah. You're a Virgo. Yep. I know that.
Yep. Yep. And it kills me.
It kills me.
I've tried so hard. I'm like, I'm shaking. Like, this is not what I planned. This was not what I saw. So I want to know, how has your expectations and desires evolved over the years in light of unpredictability?
Wow. You know, I think I just have a great reverence for right now, the present moment. I've experienced a lot of sudden change in my personal life, but also I think globally we've seen that. I mean, things can change in an instant, overnight. And I think the thing that I really try to stay true to is, what have I done today? Who am I today? Tomorrow is surely not guaranteed. We like it to be. We never envision that it won't be. But I think that allows me the space to be malleable and fluid and easier in the face of change. I'm very emotional too, so it's not always easy. When things change suddenly, I do feel deeply. I give myself permission to feel the things that I feel. What am I feeling? I'm angered, I'm triggered, I'm anxious, whatever it is. But I think as I've gotten older, and now I have children and my parents are getting older, and I've experienced a lot of loss through death in my life from very young age for people that were my age. And now also people at my age, like I lost a friend I lost my best friend when I was 13. I didn't think you could die at 13. Like what? So, you know, and then now I'm in my 40s and I lost friends who were younger and older than me. So it's like, I think I just really focus on the gratitude of today and understanding that whatever plans and control that we think we have, if it's lights out tomorrow, those plans don't matter.
estate.
And and they'll never, you know, they'll never be. And so what is our plan for today? How do we feel fulfilled today? How do I be the best version of myself today to my children, to my husband, to my friends, my family, my community? How do I live as a good person today in hopes that I get tomorrow to continue to be that and carry out the dreams that I have for myself? So I think that's how I handle it.
It's so interesting that you say that, because you actually, which was actually my next question, you had made a caption and it said, no more waiting for the right moment. You have to make the moment right now.
Mm-hmm.
And it reminded me of a shift that I did have to make during the height of the pandemic. Obviously, we were seeing just people dying left and right, so much premature loss. And I had realized just how many moments I had missed with loved ones, with my girlfriends, in pursuit of something. I want to say a career, some pursuit. I haven't zeroed in on what that was, but I want to know, was there a specific moment that inspired you to start living by this philosophy?
You know, I think for me, in 2012, I had just put out my sophomore project, The MF Life, and I had experienced a very deep spiritual awakening where I recognized that I was experiencing all these wonderful professional heights and accolades and success and attention and fame and all these things that I'd never experienced before. And then I realized that I didn't have God in my life. And I didn't have a rooting back to something bigger than myself. And I lost my voice. My voice actually left the chat. Like, I was hoarse. I was
literally.
Literally left. Left.
It Ariel.
Ariel. Yes.
Okay.
You know what's so crazy?
Okay. I was like, wait, is she saying like her voice was physically gone or like
no literally gone literally gone, like could not sing. And it's so funny because The Little Mermaid was always my favorite movie, which was wild because who how on earth would I give up this voice for a man? Good night. But the voice,
more for less,
listen, hello, okay, all right, say it. You know, I really that woke me up in a way that it was like, well, wait a second, if you don't have your voice, your entire identity right now is gone. It's gone. Like, you can't make money. If your career ended today, who are you and what are you doing? And so that moment made me realize you're going to have to get tapped into your higher self, and you're going to have to be more mindful about your words, your actions, the company, who you share your body with, all of these things. Just like as a woman in that time, it was like, you need to vibrate higher than you are. And I felt like that was my wake up call from God to be like, hey, are you living in your purpose? Or are you just along for the ride? Cause I know what I gave you, but I don't feel like you are keeping
it
at the forefront of, yeah, what you doing with it?
What you doing with it?
What you doing with it?
Okay, I have to ask, was the gap? Was this the gap in the music? I knew we were waiting for up. Like, was this?
Yes. So
okay,
yes,
I was like, was it a creative block? Like, what happened?
Yeah, so in 2012, I put out my sophomore project. I experienced these voice issues. I went through a really deep spiritual awakening in 2012. And then I made the decision to leave my record label shortly after that. It was like a year later. And then I got pregnant in 2015. And then I was in the process of finishing my album, and then that the independent label that I was working with at the time, like that relationship became tumultuous. And I was like, oh, wait a second, I got to get out of this.
Baby, I've left before.
And when I left Universal Records, it was at my own choice. Like, it wasn't bad. It was like, I had an option. The label that I was on there, it basically was dissolving, and I could have either stayed and be ingested into the system, the bigger system that I was already in and stayed, or I could have gone and explored what an independent route had looked like. And so I chose to go independent, and that situation was really, really hard. And that was when I was talking about the veil being lifted. And at that time, I got pregnant. At that time, I started to really realize that, like, I really wasn't in the best situation that I thought I was. And so I had to basically lawyer up. And that's where the quiet went. That's where I had to be like, all right, like, I'm going to get through this. I can't put out music. I'm in legal, I'm tied up in legal battles and legalities of things that I'm fighting for my rights right now. I'm fighting to get everything back. I'm fighting to get for my freedom. I'm fighting to do all that. And so it was a very heavy journey to go through quietly. And in that time, I have a child to raise and still, you know, shows to do and ways to show up and not make that my entire identity, you know, how I had been wronged and what went wrong and talking about
this. I'm like, I've known you for years. Not a clue.
And I just felt like, you know, there wasn't going to be anything. I had to process a lot of what was going on too. So there was a lot of, like I said, emotional healing, therapy. There was a lot of like physical therapy. There was a lot that was happening health-wise. Like I really, it forced me to have to lean on God more. It forced me to have to trust myself more. It forced me to. So, you know, that time in between was all the journey to get here, you know, and it felt like a really long time. But again, like when I look at it, I was like, now that I'm here, I'm like, oh, like take your time. It's yours to take. And so you don't have to answer to anyone. You don't have to, you know, go out and do, you know, take a different approach. Like you can go through this. And the beautiful part was, is that I had a partner, you know, I had a partner and I had a child and I had support in my life and love. And I was like, well, you know what? If this is where I'm meant to be, right? This is where I'm going to be. Like, I'm going to be quiet.
I have a whole life.
I'm going to be here. Yeah, I have a whole life. Honestly, one of my other favorite sayings is like, don't get so busy making a living, you forget to make a life. And I always had that in my heart. And I think God gave me the space to be a present mother in that time while I was figuring out my professional next steps. And he gave me space to be a partner and be a mother and a wife. Well, I wasn't a wife at the time, but you know, in my home.
She's married now.
Yeah, she's married now. She got married twice though. That's the funniest thing. Yeah, it's funny. It's like I married him twice because it was like we did the one in the pandemic, then we did the one in the backyard. And like, yeah, so you know, it's just a journey. And I think that that's kind of, I think that that's the moment. Like I think once I had that spiritual awakening, I realized there is more to be done here and there's more spirituality and grounding and protection of self that you need to activate. And so that's kind of been my superpower is tapping back into my intuition, tapping back into the 4-year-old version of myself who knew exactly what she wanted to be when she said she wanted to be a singing nurse. When she said, I want to grow up and be
healing,
a singing nurse.
Healing.
Yes. And that is who I am. That is what my purpose on this earth is. No matter what I do, it's a podcast. It's a song. It's a girl in the club bathroom who's going through it. And I'm like, girl, where's your friends? You want me to take you home? Like, this has been my whole life. I don't find myself in these situations and in these conversations with people like yourself, sharing this journey and sharing these stories and sharing this part of myself, because I know that that is my purpose in life. And so I feel great. I feel great about that. And I own that and I take that with great responsibility as well. So to be a healer on this planet is a great responsibility. And I'm called to the charge and I'm very proud and honored to be.
We're really wrapping up, but today you released Mona Lisa Smile. It feels like a celebration of just self-expression, joy. Can you tell us any inspiration behind it? Was there a story that you were telling with this track?
So this track, it's interesting because this track is probably the most like shit talking. I am mad on this project that I'm getting
ready
to put out.
See, that's the voice then. Because it really, I'm like my Mona Lisa. Like I feel so angelic. I mean, the artwork is giving me queen.
And that is actually what it is because it is that. It's actually perfectly meant and designed to be that way. Because when I wrote this song, I was talking about feeling the pressures of my marriage, my motherhood journey, my like how I have to show up. And like, I have so much that I've invested into this part of my life that I'll be damned to lose it all to some BS that arrives today. So I'm going to smile and I'm going to get through it and I'm going to be the queen that I am and get to it. Like, that is literally, so it is those two things. So like, if you listen to the verses, I'm speaking to someone, you know, my partner, I'm speaking to the fact that like we're at odds, but like, you don't need to say, I still got it. I'm not going to break. I'm not going to fall apart. Like, because, but the truth is that if, and I think that also too, it's a testimony to like this narrative of being a strong woman, you know, like, it's like, okay, I'm a strong woman, but if I give myself permission to break, I will. And that's what like that the section is like, there's a part of the song where it's like, if they start coming down, like if I let one tear fall, I will fall apart. So I'm going to just put my shoulders
back.
That's
literally how I feel in life.
Yes, we all do as women of color, as like black
a
women.
Statue,
like,
oh no,
girl,
oh no.
Yes,
it's coming. Keep it together.
Exactly. And so the song is this is honestly like I think it's one of my favorite songs I've ever written because there's so much. There's so much truth about the juxtaposition of what it is to be soft and hard at the same time. Like how to like, you know, your crown might be tilted, but it's still on top of your head. You know what I mean? Like you're barely hanging on, but you still showed up. Like, I think that that's something we all can feel right now. Like good child, because the way 700 days of January, 2025 came for all of us. I just feel like this song and the timing, I couldn't have known how the year would start, but I always had the intention to release this song at this time. So it's not coincidental. Again, I don't believe in coincidences. I think it's very on time. And so
it's timely. No, it's exactly where it was supposed to be.
And so I love that for you. I love that if you feel that way, the melody and the voice is not, it's not making you feel sad. It's making you feel strong. Like that's what I want. I want people to feel empowered and seen by it. And so, you know, I'm really proud. I'm really happy that it's out. This one has been, you know, in my heart for a long time. And so, yeah, just, it's just the truth of the vulnerability of it. It's just like, yeah, been there doing it as a mother, doing it as a woman, doing it as an entrepreneur, doing it, still showing up, wearing my Mona Lisa smile in the face of adversity, in the face of whatever's going on inside, I'm still showing up.
I mean, if I have to say, you're definitely out smiling and out mugging Mona Lisa. I don't know if anyone else has seen her at the Louvre, but love the title nonetheless. But we're going to end on just some light fun. You played Chaka Khan, who is a Chicago legend. I am from Chicago. In American Soul, I need to know biggest influences in music and in motherhood.
Ooh, biggest influences in music are Whitney Houston, Lauryn Hill. And I think even too, at the intersection of motherhood and music, it's Alicia Keys. I really love Alicia, period. Knowing her personally, seeing how she has just taken a hold of her life in its true and fullness of wellness and wifedom and motherhood.
Wholeness.
She's just being her fullest spiritual divine light self. And I love that. And so I really do feel inspired by her. I love everything that she's created, the success that she's experienced as a creative, as an artist, you know, the pride she has as a mother and her children and her as a wife, how she even is a part of a blended family and is able to do that. She creates wellness opportunities for women and women in the arts. And yeah, I think Alicia's one of my greatest inspirations.
She's such a badass.
Yeah.
And we end on a this or that. So it gets really fun. And we have three this or that questions. Soca or R&B?
R&B. Sorry, culture, R&B.
Not sorry, culture. Well,
the thing is, if you'd have said reggae or soca, I would have chosen reggae still because I like reggae over soca. But it's going to be R&B. I'm R&B girly. Yeah.
Okay. Reading Rainbow or Gracie's Corner?
Reading Rainbow.
And I got to know, is it an old school lullaby for you at your house or a modern day affirmation for the kids?
It's really a modern day affirmation, but it's an old song. This lullaby I sing to my children is I Love You for Sentimental Reasons by Sam Cooke. That's our lullaby. That's always been my son's favorite song. I sing it for my daughter. I also sing Nat King Cole for my daughter, L-O-V-E, because her middle name is Love. And those are the songs I sing. I sing old school love songs to my children as lullabies. So,
the rich culture they're going to have. They're going to really be those kids who are like, y'all don't know nothing about this. Y'all don't know nothing about this.
These kids are going to be like Gracie's Corner. They're going to be like, but do you know Sam Cooke, though?
But do you know Sam Cooke?
But do you know Nat King Cole? Okay.
Well, no, I can't. I'm like, I wish my mom can sing, but like, I do envy kids whose parents like can really blow. Like,
you know what's wild? Just
putting you to bed with a lullaby from Melanie Fiona. Can we?
You know what's wild? Let me tell. Yes, you can get that on a record. And let me tell you something. I actually forget because Jared, my husband, he can actually sing. Like, he can actually really sing too. Like, it's not just a you got to hold the note. No, he can actually really sing. And before he became who he is as a super talented, you know, powerful executive and partner at Range and manager, he was a songwriter. And that's actually how we met. And so he is a really talented singer. And I remember one night he was putting our son to sleep and the monitor was on and I was in another room and he was singing to him. And I was like, what a lucky kid. I was like, this kid gets both parents who can sing, whoever's putting them to sleep. Both parents can kill that lullaby. So I was like, you know what? Shout out to these kids. They got a good nighttime routine.
I can't even imagine. Like, I'm just like, I know I would be asleep in 0.5 seconds. Like, I'm like, this is, wow. Yeah. I want parents put on little sounds, some raindrops.
Goodness. We got white noise. Yeah.
Okay. I wasn't loved the way I needed to have been loved, but
yes, you were. Yes. Yes, you were. Yes, you were.
They were incredible. Yes. They're amazing. My mom actually can sing. She just really doesn't. That's the crazy thing.
Wow. Yeah.
This was so filling. I always look for a daily dose of soul food and you were that today. The song has been that. And I'm just truly so honored that I even get to be in conversation with you. So thank you. Will never be enough.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. Thanks for creating a space to share. And good for you for making this happen. Because again, where we started and where we are is exactly where we're supposed to be. So congratulations on launching this. And thank you for having me be a part of it.
Thank you.
Yeah. Progress.
You've been listening to Women in Progress, a show about the women we're becoming. Hosted by me, Mara Chance. And co-executive produced by myself and Elise Ellis of A Few Minutes Studios. Original music by Satara Troutman. Shout out to our sound engineer, Marcus Hom. Until next time, take care and keep progressing.
Help each other through, help each other through.
Thank you for listening to Women in Progress with Mara Chance. Love you.